Hi everyone, obviously I'm in San Francisco, which is not hard to tell by the view behind me. What you might not know is under this bridge, if I move aside a little bit, there's actually quite a good swell going today as well. It does break onto the rocks, so possibly not a great spot for a board ride, but anyway, it is kind of nice today. It's sunning up a little bit. I'm doing a massive walk. I'm going to try and cover a marathon in a bit, probably, by the time I get back to my hotel. I'm 17K in, and it's, what are we? It's 20 to 10 in the morning, so I think I'm tracking pretty well. So that keeps me amused today. What has also kept me amused this week is RSA. So that's why I'm here. I did a talk yesterday along with some folks from Veronis, who got me over to do the big talk, as well as also doing some talks at their stand. And there are a few interesting things this week. On the talk, I did my talk that I've done several times before, slightly modified version because I had a bit less time, about lessons learned from billions of breached data records. And this was a talk about all sorts of things that I've learned as part of running Have I Been Pwned? And one of the things that struck me, and I sort of realized it more when doing this talk, but it's happened a few times before, is I start the talk and I say, okay, so who has used this service before? And I'm showing Have I Been Pwned? And out of the hundreds of people in the room, probably about half to two-thirds, not just this time, but other times, put their hand up and go, you know, yeah, they've used it. Which I just find fascinating, blows me away, right? You go to somewhere totally different in the world and there's these hundreds of people that have used this thing that I've created sitting at home on my spare time, which I think is really awesome, and it's just cool that any of us can do this now with cloudy things and all the other bits and pieces of technology that make this possible. So that was kind of cool. RSA in general, if you've not been to RSA before, was... it's a little bit information overload, a little bit sideshow circus. And I'll give you some examples. So you wander around and all these vendors are selling their security things, right? And all of them are going to fix all your problems, as you'd kind of expect. But there's a lot of sort of very eye-catching stands. Like they try and obviously compete for eyeballs and compete for your ears too, because a lot of them are standing up there doing presentations, as I did for Veronis, and I'll come back to that in a moment. And some of the stands, I should have actually sort of taken some time out and taken some photos and wrote it up, because some of them are pretty way out. And I made one comment on a tweet where I said one of them felt like a game show, right? Like there's all these lights and things going up, there's all these people sitting around, there's a presenter up the front, you're winning stuff. So that was kind of funny. Quite a few of them did similar things. In fact, a lot of the stands were giving stuff away. One of them was even giving away $100,000. I assume only once. Another one was giving away a motorbike. Not so sure what that's got to do with AppSec. However, a motorbike would be a kind of nice thing to win. One of them had, now I'm not sure if the correct term for this is pole dancer or acrobat. And I suspect there's actually a pretty fine line between them. And it may just come down to the clothing. But there was a pole, and there was a lady in a leotard, and I didn't see her in action, but it did kind of feel like it's probably getting to that edgier side of edgy, particularly in this day and age with what we consider a sort of normal and acceptable at a tech conference. So that was kind of amusing. Obviously, lots of claims around things like, we're going to kill passwords. Pro tip, you're not going to kill passwords. They're going to be around for ages. We're going to have absolutely zero false positives, or we're going to keep everything out of your network. And there's some really quite spectacular claims about what some of these organizations can do. And of course, they're all saying that they can do it and the other guys can't. So it's a little bit of a spectacle. And there are literally hundreds and hundreds of stands like this. So that was kind of amusing. For Veronis, I did the big talk as a normal conference talk yesterday, which was Friday. I am recording this late because I wanted to come to a nice spot and do it. I also did a few talks at their stand, as others were doing, on SQL injection. And I think people that came and watched it got a bit of a shock, because they go to all these other stands and it would just be like, PowerPoints about how awesome we are and about how our things will do good stuff for you, and there's graphs and charts and things like that, and I'm there doing stuff and showing code, which In some ways, wasn't actually appropriate for all the audience, because I'm sure that lines of ASP.NET, C-sharp and talk about SQL injection didn't resonate with all. However, I did get people doing doing live demos. I get people from the audience to come up and actually use Havage to mount a SQL injection attack, which is always a bit of a Mickey Mouse example, right? Like, it's a trivial, simple example, but it always resonates, and they go, oh, wow, like, I didn't know it was that easy. So that was all fun. That was an entertaining time. Yesterday, I was also very happy to see that RSA, unbeknownst to me, had this award thing where they were giving awards for the best blog and the most entertaining blog. And I got an award for the best blog post of the year, which was about how we keep failing at security, which I wrote in about mid-2016. I'll link to it in the blog post that goes along with this video. And it's just a lot of stuff like, here's, you know, these sort of ongoing, ridiculous, crazy, stupid password rules. Here's other things we're doing, which we all know are just crap. But we, and I say collectively as an industry, we keep doing this. So I was really happy to see that. That sort of independent endorsement is always awesome. And regardless of how long you've been writing stuff for, it's always nice to sort of get that independent recognition, which is cool. Now, while I'm talking about events, and I almost forget this because I'm on the other side of the world already, but I did actually do a talk at Microsoft Ignite on the Gold Coast back in my hometown on Tuesday. And I basically did the talk, and then first thing the next morning came to the US. And that talk was about building real-world apps on Azure on a coffee budget. By the way, I keep saying Azure. I think the Americans like to say Azure. I don't know. You all know what I mean. So anyway, I did that talk, went fantastically well. I decided to do a talk that was just all demos. There were, I think, three slides in the intro. Got past that and then just did hands-on for an hour and a quarter, which was actually pretty cool for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a lot easier for me to prepare. And off the back of a Europe trip and just before coming here, that was quite welcome. Number two, believe it or not, people like seeing real things. Right, like, and it's the same as the SQL injection stuff at RSA. When you can actually show something that works, right, as opposed to just going, you know, here is the marketing paraphernalia and the graphs and the charts, that really hits home. And the feedback I had was fantastic. I'll share all of that on my blog. I'll share all my scores. I always put everything that I get, good, bad, or otherwise, on the events pages. So that was really fantastic, and I just went through a whole bunch of things in Azure about how have I been pwned and kept the price down. So lots of stuff like, here's how I use autoscale, here's when I manually scale. Here is why I use table storage as opposed to a SQL database. And I actually use both of them, but I use them for different purposes because they both do different things well. And they also both do different things badly too. So being a little bit promiscuous with your data structures. I also spoke about using Cloudflare, and I've written a lot about Cloudflare in the past, and that has made an enormous impact on reducing my costs. And I literally go through my Cloudflare portal and I show, here is the number of servers it's managed to reduce, here's the percentage of bandwidth that's reduced, and it's something like it's taken 80% of my bandwidth and about 75% of my servers away. And their free service does this. And it's a piece of cake to do. So in the talk, I actually put one of my other websites, my worldsgreatestazuredemo.com website, into Cloudflare live in the talk and showed how it took probably about 3 or 4 minutes to do it. That talk will be published publicly at some point. I only did it a few days ago, so it might be a week or two yet. I'll share that when it's out. So that was that one. Now, also this week, might have actually been last week. In very recent times, I had some online, let's say, discussion with Qantas. Now, Qantas is our national airline. I fly dozens of trips a year on Qantas or on their partners on Qantas tickets. And they've been doing screwy things with their HTTPS for years. And in fact, for years, I have been using them as examples of, for example, here's what happens when you have mixed mode. Because they had lots of cases of having HTTPS pages, which they would put HTTP things into, and your browser would give you warnings. Now recently, and I spoke about this in one of the recent updates, I wrote a blog post about how HTTPS has now reached this tipping point, where it's become so popular and it's growing so quickly that we're sort of at the point where it's becoming the norm. So I said, you know, look, for example, Mozilla said they've served more than 50% of their requests that go through Firefox over HTTPS. Good news. I showed some stats from my mate Scott Helm, who's looking at the growth rate of Alexa top 1 million sites enforcing HTTPS, and it had doubled in a year. All good stuff. One of the catalysts, though, was a change in the browsers, where Chrome 56 and Firefox 51 are now warning you if you go to a site with a login form served over HTTP. Doesn't matter that it posts to HTTPS. If it serves over HTTP, it gives you warnings. And I had admittedly baited Qantas a little bit by saying, hey, Qantas, I went to your website and I went to log on and I got a warning in my browser, is something broken? And they had some pretty ordinary answers, and that's probably a very generous way of putting it. So the social media account, and I acknowledge social media accounts are never really the best source of technical knowledge. However, they had obviously been fed some technical info, because they went on to explain that, look, it posts over SSL, by which they meant TLS or HTTPS. So that's cool. Wow, these waves are pretty awesome. I almost got hit by one just before. So it posts over HTTPS, so everything's cool, and the privacy policy says everything's okay, and they were just bullshit answers, which also included a bit about, what was the really weird thing? Oh yeah, a bit about basically saying that the browser was wrong, or that to ignore the browser warnings. And this is fundamentally bad advice for any organization to say, hey, your browser independently warning you that security is wrong is something you should ignore, is always a bad thing. So I did prod them on it again after I wrote that original blog post where I also prodded them. So I have prodded them a couple of times. And that was when they gave me the bad answers. I came very close this last week to actually writing something up. Had it not been for someone from Qantas actually getting in touch with me, who I hope will take it seriously and get this fixed. Because for people like me traveling around the world and using their website from dodgy places, albeit I always run my VPN, you really want to see the thing served securely. It's not a hard thing to do. So hopefully that's sorted out. And while I think of it, with HTTPS, this week someone from Let's Encrypt contacted me and said, hey, thank you for writing the Let's Encrypt blog post on using Let's Encrypt in Azure. Would you mind updating one of your figures? Because I had said, and this was in the middle of last year, it was July last year, 2016, I'd said there were 5 million Let's Encrypt certificates have been issued. And to me, that was an impressive number because they'd only launched at the very end of 2015, start of 2016, depending on how you look at beta versus not beta. And they said, could you update it because it's now more than 28 million. And that's awesome. So we have gone from 4 or 5 million, depending on which figure you look at, is it unique certificates or active certificates or domains that certificates have been issued for? Either way, mid-single digit figures to like 28 million. Which is awesome. I wish I had had that stat actually for my HTTPS tipping point blog post. But that's great. So they have grown, you know, what about sixfold within the period of 7-8 months, which is just fantastic. So very happy to see that. They're doing great things. Now, I didn't get a chance to blog anything this week because obviously I've had a bit on. I did do my Security Sense column though. And there was something there that kind of bugged me a little bit, which is Australia's mandatory disclosure laws. Now, this is the mandatory data breach disclosure laws. Some parts of the world already have. Over in this part of the world, they have them on a state-by-state level. In EU, it's coming as part of GDPR. Other parts of the world have other ways of doing it. And this is part of the irony of it, right? So we're talking about global internet systems, and the whole world, of course, needs to break down everything by their own local regulatory bodies and do things differently for the systems that we all use. And then if you're dealing with anyone in the EU, they think that no matter where you are in the world, they should follow their rules, which is going to be kind of interesting with GDPR. Regardless, there are a few things I really don't like about the way the Australian legislation's been put forward, and it just passed through our Senate, so it looks like this is going through. One of the things that really riled me up, and hopefully it'll rile you up too, it should rile you up, is they said there are going to be cases where you don't have to report data breaches. And there are a few things, like if the turnover of the organisation's less than $3 million a year, if the classes of data don't meet certain criteria. But basically what they said is they don't want to put a burden on the organisations who've been breached. And this is such a protect the guilty sort of scenario, because what they're saying is there are organisations who screw up their security. And there is no polite way of putting it. This is what happens. Now, there are various degrees of negligence, I acknowledge that, but one way or the other, you have been owned. And you have to take responsibility for that. And they're saying that what they're worried about is putting too much burden on the organisations who are taking responsibility for having had their servers hacked. Which is just ridiculous, because it's negating the fact that there are victims, innocent victims. You, me, we've all been in data breaches, whether we know it or not. We're at the receiving end of this. So it's our information which has been hacked, which has been sold, traded, exploited. But we got to protect the organisation, because we don't want to make it too hard on them to have to send everyone an email. And that's what it boils down to, right? Send an email, a notification. So that was one of the things. Another thing is, they said, we're worried about breach fatigue. So what they're saying is there are so many data breaches happening, they're worried that people are hearing about too many, so perhaps we shouldn't tell them about too many more. And again, this is just such a bullshit response. You know, I mean, the underlying issue here is that we have too many data breaches. We need to stop having so many data breaches. And the way we're going to need to stop it is we're going to need to get organisations to be more accountable and build better software. And we're not going to achieve that if we do the first thing, which says, well, sometimes it puts a little bit too much burden on them to have to let people know. So I was pretty unhappy about those two things. The third thing is they said they can take, this is organisations who've had an incident, can take up to a month if they're not too sure if they've had an incident or not, in order to investigate it. This should not be a 1 month period. We should be looking at around about 72 hours here. And part of the reason for this is that when systems are compromised and data is taken, attackers have a window of opportunity to use that data where it is much more valuable at sort of 0 day hour or 0 hour, where the information is actually taken and no one knows about it. It's in their best interest to exploit it as quickly as possible. So to then say, well, look, you can take up to 30 days or a month or whatever it was, just to be sure, leaves so much wiggle room for an organisation to do the wrong thing. Now, in there, I mentioned the Red Cross. And the Red Cross in Australia, the Red Cross Blood Service in Australia, had an incident back in about October. And I think I discussed this at the time on this weekly update. My data was in there, my wife's data was in there, with the help of AusCert in Australia, so CERT, our computer emergency response team, they managed to turn this whole thing around within 72 hours, get notifications to everyone, do press, do media, the whole thing. They managed it beautifully, and it's hard to sort of say beautifully in the same sentence as data breach, but they did the best possible job that they could have under the circumstances. And that's what we should be aiming for. That's what we should be holding organisations accountable for. And these guys showed that it's possible. So these long lead times and, oh, we don't want to make it too hard on the organisation that screwed up, is just totally unacceptable. Anyway, so that was that. Last thing this week is I've had NetSparker once again sponsoring my blog, fifth week in a row. Big thanks to those guys. I went and saw them at RSA today. They had, this week rather, they had a stand there. So it was nice to catch up with them. I still use them in all my workshops as part of my wrap up, where I go, okay, here are automated tools that can make your life easier. I'm heading off to Texas tomorrow. I'm going to Dallas to do another workshop there, and I'll be using NetSparker again there. And we will see someone altogether new on my sponsor list tomorrow. So thank you very much for watching. This has been a pretty nice looking spot with the sun come out, I think, for a weekly update. Next week will be somewhere even sunnier, which will be back home. Thanks for watching.